Good morning. We ended off last week with a discussion that although a shoyl or a seicher cannot, if you rent something or borrow something, you cannot lend it out to your friend. And in exception to this is real estate. When you rent a house, the halacha is under normal circumstances, you have the right to sublet it. The assumption is, since you cannot walk away with a house, it is difficult to damage it. If there is damage, it is readily apparent. Therefore, there's no loss. Any person is permitted to sublet it as long as the person who he's subletting it to is the same size family and is not. There's no reason to believe it'll cause extra damage. We mentioned last week that even if the price increases, you rented a house for $1,000 a month, you now want to leave, but at this point the price is increased. You have the right to find another tenant, charge them $2,000 a month, and you would keep the profits. Since you own the lease, you have the right to the use. If you can sell the use at a profit, then the tenant is entitled to the whatever profit is earned. Now that being said, if the landlord tells the tenant, you know, the tenant is moving out and wants to sublet it. The landlord says, you know what, instead of subletting and instead of finding someone else, give it to me. I'll use the house. I have a use for it now. I'm coming to town for a few weeks, so it's okay. You know, leave, don't pay me the rent. I'll take over the house. So the halacha is that assuming the tenant in this case is not making a profit, he's finding someone else who will pay, who's just covering his cost. In this case, the halacha is the landlord has kedima. He has priority. Similar to the concept of bar metzra, where a neighbor has the first rights on a property because to him there's a benefit, and therefore we tell the person selling, instead of selling it to a stranger, sell it to the neighbor who has a benefit. So kolshkein v'kolshkein, if you have the owner of the house, and he wants you to own house, he doesn't want you to sublet it to a third party, he has the right to do so. However, if you rented the house for $1,000, you're now able to find someone who's willing to pay $2,000 a month. In that case, you have the right to tell the landlord, it's true you have priority. It's true that if this argument exists, why should I give it to a stranger? Let me give it to the owner. But that's only true. I don't have a loss. In this case, where I have someone willing to pay $2,000 a month, I'll have $1,000 profit. If you want this property, you have to pay me the difference. And therefore, the landlord will have the right to say, give me the property, but he will have to pay his tenant whatever lost profits, whatever the tenant could have earned by subletting it to a third party.
How much proof does he have to show that he has someone for higher rent?
It's a good question, but if the landlord doesn't believe him, the tenant can say, okay, if you don't believe me, I have someone and I'll just rent it to him. And he can go ahead and rent it to this third. You know, the landlord's position is fairly weak. He doesn't really have a kinyan here. It's an al timna toiv mi baiwav. Why do me? It's not right to give it to someone else when the owner is here at the same price. But if the tenant claims I have a loss by giving it to you, he'd have the right to. Then the tenant cannot be forced to give it to the landlord at a loss.
He's not considered to be
mighty. He's not a mighty because he has the lease. And we're going to discuss next week by Richos who's the mochzik when there's a suffix on karka. And that's going to be an interesting discussion. But in this case, everyone agrees al pi halacha, the tenant has it, the tenant has the right to sublet it. The landlord's only claim is yashrus, that why give it to a stranger, give it to me. When there's any loss, the tenant will win. Now, in even more extreme chiddush, there was a case, which is a bit of an ironic circumstance, but basically you had a tenant. He lived in the house, in the apartment for a couple of months. And before he moved out, he wanted to sublet. Now, he found someone who was willing to pay him more than his rent. So he stood to make $1,000 a month off this flipping. The landlord said, you know what? Instead of giving this to this third party, give it to me. I'll pay you the extra. I'll take the apartment, and I'll pay you whatever you would have earned by giving it to this stranger. Al pi halacha, he has that right. The tenant turned around and said, wait a second. I don't trust you. How do I know you're going to pay me? This other person who I had is someone who I trust, so I know every month he's going to pay me. He's going to pay me the rent. I'll earn this profit. You, we don't have such a good relationship. We've been fighting for the past 10 months. I don't believe that you're going to pay me the extra amount. The halacha is the tenant is right. Because the tenant has the lease, he has the right to sublet it. It's only a question of al timna tayyib mibaylov. The landlord says it's yashrus to give it to me. The tenant can say, for yashrus, I don't have to put myself at risk. And therefore, unless the landlord is willing to pay in advance to this tenant, the tenant can say, I don't want to give it to you, and he can give it to a third party. Now, this discussion, or this halacha over here, in Sfiras Karka, it's a halacha psuka, that the landlord has kadima, the landlord could say, don't sublet it to a third party, give it to me. But this is actually brought down in a different context, which is unfortunately very negaya today. And that is, what happens if a person borrows money? He borrows money, whatever he's investing, he's buying real estate, and the real estate market crashes. He's not able to pay it back. So very often, the lenders at some point, they want it off their books. They're willing to sell the loan at a discount. So you have $1 million loan, they're willing to sell it for $600,000. The debtor, along comes the debtor, and says, wait a second, why are you selling it to a stranger for $600,000? Sell it to me. I'll buy it off you. Zakvim my bit. The debtor has that right. And his makor is our halacha. Just like if you own a property and you lease it out, if the tenant now wants to sublet it, the owner has kadima, he can say, since it's my property, why sell it? Why sublet it to a stranger? Give it to me. I have a benefit because it's mine. He says, who I did? If you have a debtor. The creditor, in a sense, has a shibud, he has a lien on your property. He wants to sell it to a third party. So zakvim ma'bit, based on our halacha, the debtor can say, why sell it to a third party? Sell it to me. Now, obviously, you know, ma'bit's case was not talking about a strategic default where the person had the money and was just doing an avla. If the debtor is doing an avla by not paying and now wants to use a yashav ratoiv, sell me the loan at 60 cents on the dollar, that's obviously not going to work. But in a case where everyone's acting in good faith, the creditor wants to sell it, the ma'bid paskins, the debtor has kadima, and he has the right to say, sell to me, do not sell it to an outsider. The shach, on the other hand, takes issue with this ma'bid in a number of places, and although the Chochma Shloimei in Siman Samach Aleph defends the ma'bid, the Mishpat Sholem says that Roiv Poiskim argue, and he says you will certainly not be able to be Moitzi Mamon based on it, and therefore is a difficult case to win. But this is an issue that comes up, especially during the real estate crash when banks are selling off their loans. This is a very common fight that people had. Don't buy my loan from the bank, just leave it, and I will negotiate, I'll settle with the bank. And this very often was one of the issues that they fought about. Now, as far as... So in the case of Karka, the case is talking about before the fact. It's talking about before the deal happened. It is mashma that if the tenant sublets it, but the new buyer or the new tenant did not move in yet, you still can make the claim. But once he's in, and now it's a question of evicting him, throwing him out of the house and finding another place, you are al timna tayyib mibaylov, you are yashrus, can't force someone to go to throw someone out on the street and force him to move again. But it is mashma that simply because a kinyan was done, if they didn't actually move in, you still could exercise this right. Correct. A regular hilchos bar metzra is even after the fact. And more than that, regular bar metzra only really kicks in after the fact. It's a claim against the buyer. That is the regular din of bar metzra. However, even hilchos bar metzra, when you're not a neighbor, when you're just the bailum harishainim, so although before the fact you have the right to say sell it to me, it was not a reason after the fact to evict someone. So it's not the exact same halacha. In the case of debt, besides this ma'bit that brings a raya from our halacha, he also discusses whether you would have the status of bar metzer as well. That is also part of the discussion, but it's a separate sugya, which is why I tried avoiding it before. Now this is all maker hadin. A tenant, when dealing with real estate, has the right to sublet it. Today, the minhag, I think, is pretty clear that you do not have the right to sublet it. It is in virtually every lease. And therefore, you know, a minhag is mevatel halacha in these cases. Presumption is you would not have the right, and you would not have the right to do so. Now, what's interesting is that since the default halacha, bizman the Gemara, was that when you, that a tenant had the right to sublet it, if they wrote specifically in the contract that the tenant has the right to sublet it, so now we have a question: what was the purpose of writing this in? That's the default. Even without any contract, you have the right to sublet it. So there's a concept of letfuya yasa, that if you have a contract and you write something which is not necessary, the assumption is you're trying to add to the rights of the tenant. And therefore, although normally a tenant can sublet it, that's only to a household that's the equivalent size. If he wants to sublet it to a larger family, he does not have the right to do so, because there he is causing the landlord a loss. In a case where the contract specifically grants him the right to sublet it, this halacha will not apply. And we'll say that it was added in to give the tenant extra rights, and in that case, he could give it even to a larger family. Today, this probably would not apply, since the default today is that a tenant cannot sublet it. If you do give him permission in the contract, you are simply overriding the minhag, and there's no reason to take it this extra step further. And therefore, if you have in the contract, you have the right to sublet it, the owner would still likely have the right to say you cannot give it to a larger family or to a family that's more likely to cause damage to the unit.
What about commercial leases? Commercial leases, is there a right to sublet?
I'm not familiar with the minhag. We have a number of lawyers here who could perhaps enlighten you. The standard is that you can't. Okay, so then that's okay, so then that's consistent with residential. Okay, so now let's talk about, now that we've finished the discussion about subletting, let's talk a little bit about using the property. Normally, when you rent something for a specific use, you're limited to that use. And as we pointed out, if you rented it for the use of your family, you cannot invite other people into your house, you cannot take in boarders, because that is going to cause extra wear and tear that you do not have the right to do. Now, if you rent it for a particular use, you want to use it as a store, so and you then decide to change the kind of store, the kind of business that you're doing in the property, you would have a similar discussion. If you're switching from a grocery to a bakery, and for some reason a bakery creates more wear and tear, you would not have the right to do so because that's you're going above the use of the lease. There's a fascinating shuv from the David Mesharim, Chelik Aleph Simon Ayin Hey. And his case was a person rented a house, presumably for his personal use, and he decided to start teaching, to come Lama Tinokus, to invite his, to start a cheder, to have kids come to his house and to teach them. So the question is, are you allowed to do that? Is this a legitimate use of a residential unit or not? So, Abu Pashas, you say, that should be also. Certainly, having a bunch of kids running around the house could cause extra wear and tear. And therefore, the owner would have the right to be ma'akev and say this is not included in the lease.
What about the neighbors?
That's a different story. Zog, Niske Shcheinim, we'll get, is going to be a future share. Zog, the David Meshar, not so fast. Because it's true that when you have a cheder, there's going to be a certain amount of wear and tear. On the other hand, the Gemara tells us that a house which is nishma, the kol Torah, is not nechrav. It's a school that if there's Torah being learned in a house, it will not be destroyed. So, on one hand, we have a problem. We have kids running around, we aren't here. On the other hand, we have an advantage. If there's Torah being learned in a house, that is a school that the house won't be destroyed. Zakat David Misharim, once you create a suffix, once you have a situation where some people will be mocked, some people would prefer it to happen. So once it's a suffix, even if the landlord claims that I am someone who is mocked, it's Dvar Shebelev. Since there was no explicit condition, they didn't discuss it. This is something which many people are not mocked on. It's not similar to the case where you just add people, where there's certainly a problem, it's certainly a chesaron, and there's no benefit. There you can stop, but in a case where there's benefit and a risk, and some people... For some people, it balances out. Some people, it doesn't. The other David Misharim says that misafik, you would be allowed to use it to have to teach children in the house. Now, I don't know if this would apply to taking renting a house and just opening a school in it, but the case that David Mishar was dealing with is the fellow lived in the house. He was just having kids come in during the day and he was teaching them. So it was still being used as a resident. It was just on the side. There were some kids in there. But this is the David Mishar Mishiddish, that in the absence of a Tanai, once it's something which some people are makbid, some people are not, suffered, you cannot stop someone from going ahead and using it. Correct, correct. If there's any language in the lease that specifies residential use only, certainly the contract would need to be followed. His case was it was rented stam, and no one thought of putting it in, you know.
The
person just rented it. Now, there are people who teach children in their house. It's something that does happen. And there was no discussion of exactly what it would be used for. He just said, I'm renting your house. Enochanami. If it specifies, then certainly you have the right to do this and nothing else. But if it's done stam, then we have to look at, is this use the equivalent, or is it more stressful, more wear and tear on this changed use? Okay, so that runs really, that really goes back to a discussion that we had, but when a person in Seichar Chamor, Har and Bika, if it's the equivalent use, you might be responsible for any damage that occurs, but it will love to be usur lechachilah to switch it unless it's something which is clearly a problem. So if he wants to restrict it, he could, but in the absence of language restricting it, if it's the equivalent risk, then it won't be usur.
What about there's a swimming pool, and the guy, he rented it, and he wants to now rent it to let people use the swimming pool, and I can use the house, and I can damage everything, it's just more of a risk.
I would say renting out a swimming pool creates, you know, significant liability. I would say it's something that everyone would be makbid on, and you would not have the right to do that unless you got rishos.
You're saying that the soicher is the mukhsar with regard to the absence of
soicher? So the David Misharim does say he's a mukhsar. He says first of all it's a question of dvar mishar b'lev. Because you have the right to use it, and it's not, and the restriction here is dvar mishar b'lev, and he says even if it's a suffik, he says the seichel would be a mopsik. Now we'll have to discuss next week. The pashtus in halacha is karka b'cheses baleha. However, we will see that although that's true, by either by a plukta derabvasa or certain cases, the seichel will have a din of a mopsik. And that's again, it's not by all means it is not simple, but that mitzvah will be next week's discussion. Well, it depends. In some places, then there's probably an assumption that there might be a playgroup. But otherwise, you know, the Bezin created a residential lease for the Lakewood community. And I mentioned it before, we put in all of the hot button issues. So we have a checkbox. And one of the things, you know, this is for residential use only. And then there's a checkbox. Either you could use you could have a playgroup, you can't. And it's something which you should negotiate in advance. Okay, so now that we've discussed this concept, the use, what happens if the tenant wants out? He rents the house for 3 years, and at some point he moves, he decides his family gets bigger, and he wants to break the lease. What are his responsibilities? So assuming there's a fixed term, you rented it for 3 years. In a moment we'll discuss what happens when it was just month to month or without a fixed term. But if there's a fixed term, you're renting it for 3 years. So I'll be pashtus. You have a contract. The contract says 3 years. Everyone is locked in. And if the tenant decides to move out in middle, he is still bound to the terms of the contract. And therefore, the halacha, if he moves out early, he is responsible to pay for rent until the end of the term. Now, according to many poskim, he does have the right to demand an adjustment be made. And that is, if he stayed in the unit, he'd be living there. There'd be wear and tear, there'd be expenses. There would be, I mean, if the landlord's paying for utilities, there are certain expenses associated with having a tenant in your property. If he moves out early, while he's responsible for the rent, he has the right to say that I'm going to deduct from the rent, kepoyel batel, I'm going to deduct the benefit that you're having from the fact that it's vacant. And each case will obviously be different, but he'll be able to deduct the wear and tear, the cost that would be involved if he stayed. And Ktzayis argues, Ktzayis says the concept of taking off kepoyel batel is only when there's an oinus. If the tenant on his own just decides to move out, he has to pay the full amount of rent, but it's a machlokes, and it would be hard to be mitzi the full amount. Correct. That's all part of the cheshbon of what the benefit is. Another benefit is, for example, the landlord can use the unit. If it's empty, he can use it when he needs to. It'll depend on the case. When Tzais brings down a Maror Makom that perhaps there is no benefit of having a vacant house, what you're saying is part of the cheshbon. Each case will be different. We'll have to see, is there a benefit and what that benefit is worth.
Is it right on the landlord to try to mitigate the damages?
Okay, so that, excellent. Now, although the halacha is that a tenant that moves out has to pay rent until the end of the term, if the landlord, or for that matter, if the tenant, finds a replacement tenant that's willing to pay the full rent, so now, under most circumstances, the landlord is not entitled to double dip, and therefore he would not be able to recover against the tenant because there was no loss. He got paid for the unit. Now there is mechitim is makes diyukim in different rishonim about whose responsibility it is to find a tenant to mitigate the loss. What it seems is, as far as the bottom line halacha is that the landlord certainly doesn't have a proactive obligation to market the property. There's a contract. The tenant's lease, it's his problem. If he wants to move out, he's going to have to pay unless he finds someone else. If it's readily available, and the landlord just says, I don't care, I'm not renting it to him, then he will have a problem. He will not be able to force the tenant to pay. However, if there's nothing readily available, the fact that he could go market, he could advertise, he can run and do and be matriach, there the Rajba says very clearly it's not his responsibility. So, sir, again, if it's available, the landlord has to take it, but the landlord certainly doesn't have to be proactive. He does not have to go ahead and to try to find people to go ahead and to take
it. The secular law is different. So
what is the secular law?
It's probably more of a duty to mitigate damages. The secular law?
Okay, I would say in that case it's probably a dina machuz dina kenegada halacha mefureshes. It would be hard. It probably would not apply. But again, that's a long discussion.
Can the landlord decline the replacement tenant because he says this tenant, I'm not so comfortable with them. I was comfortable with you, but with them.
He would if the tenant finds a replacement. And the landlord claims he's not suitable, he would have the burden of proof to establish this person is not a good tenant. He couldn't just, not passing the smell test would not be a sufficient defense.
What about the utilities? If the guy had fixed $70 utilities that were ever used, now they're gone. So he's not using it at all. So therefore,
that's kapayo bato. There certainly, even if there's no replacement, that tenant has to pay the rent, he would be able to deduct the benefit that the landlord had. This is certainly a benefit, the fact that there are no utilities being used. Now, although normally when there's a contract and the tenant moves out, he is responsible, there is a tremendous machlokes about what happens if there's an oinus. The tenant doesn't just one day pick up and decide to leave. There's an oinus. Something happens. It's a change of circumstances. It's beyond his control. The Ramah in Simin Shin Lamed Aleph has a fairly extreme case. The tenant died. And the landlord went ahead and brought action against the tenant's estate, saying, the fellow signed a 3-year contract. His estate is bound to pay rent until the end of the term. So this is a tremendous machlokes. We've mentioned a number of times that when you buy something, you bought it, it's yours. Taina of oinus is generally not a very good taina. On the other hand, schirus, there's a machlokes among the rishonim. What type of kinyan is it? If you look at schirus as a memkar liyoyme, which is Gemara's lashon by oina, it's like you bought it for the next 3 years, then there's a very strong argument that since you bought it, even if an oinus occurs, you're locked in to pay. Again, the Shach says even if it's memkar liyoyme, this is halacha wouldn't be true, but according to many shitas, if it's memkar liyoyme, you'd be locked in. On the other hand, we have saw a concept by schirus paylon. You hire a worker. You don't own the worker. You're paying him to work. There's a certain shiba, there's a certain achrayas he has to perform services. If it's only a shibud, there the halacha is more relaxed, and there if there's an oinus, something happens, it's beyond his control, he has the right to get out of the shibud, to get out of the contract, and by an oinus, he would not be responsible to continue paying. Now, by serious karka, it's a huge machlokes. The Ramah in Simin Shin Lamed Aleph Paskins, it is a suffix, And therefore, if the tenant has not yet paid, you cannot force him to pay. He is the mochzik. On the other hand, if the tenant advanced rent, if there's a security deposit, he paid up front, and now he wants a refund because he had to move out because of an oinus, there, because of a safek, he would not be able to to get the money back. The shach says not even a safek. Now, kolpanim, it would really depend on who the mochzik would be in this particular case. That's true, and they're locked in. But an oinus is an oinus. And the rule is that that if an oinus happens that neither of them could have anticipated, then the hefsid is on the Baal Bayis.
Right, so what's the tzad that the state was responsible for the balance of the rent? The person who signed the lease only signed it as long as he's alive.
No, the same way if you look at a schirus as if you're buying the use for 3 years. So from day one, when you make the kenya, you now own the next 3 years' worth of use of this item.
With expectation of
3 years. Yeah, there are a lot of expectations. When you buy a house, if a person buys a car and dies the next day, his estate can't return the car on the argument that he wouldn't have bought it had he known what would happen. So it's true, if you ask him what his expectation was, he certainly expected to survive the 3 years, but that's Dvarim Shabalev. There was no t'nai that was made. And who says the landlord would agree to this condition? Okay, so this argument that you're making is the Shach makes this argument, saying that even though it's Nemker Leyoime, he says, who says it's Nemker for a 3 year period? However, the other Rishonim say no. The same way when you buy a car, it's yours. And you cannot return a car your estate cannot return a car with the argument, had he known he would die the next day, he would not have bought that convertible because he bought it. So if you buy the use for 3 years, it's the same thing. You're locked in. The car's not lasting forever either. The car's going to, after in 10 years, it's going to be junk.
When it comes to a lease, even if it's a Kimemkar, the guy expects, why would the person lease something past the time they expect to live?
That's true. No one would lease it past, but on the other hand, who says the landlord is interested in taking risks based on your actuarial life expectancy? When he signs a contract, he's signing a long-term contract because he needs a firm commitment, and that firm commitment is without any conditions. No, so that Taisus asks, why don't you always say blev when the item dies the next day or when someone dies? And he says when there are two parties, when the two parties involved, so then you have to make this condition. So,
what if the landlord dies?
No, landlord dies. The tenant still, he can't evict, the landlord's yashim cannot evict the tenant. The landlord was meshavid the property, and the tenant has the right to continue remaining in the property until the end of the term. Now, one important exception, which we discussed at length when we went through Schiras Payolim, is that although when an oinus occurs, according to many Paiskim, you have the right to breach the lease. That is only when it was not anticipated. When it's an oinus that either neither party could have anticipated, or an oinus that both parties were equally aware that could happen. On the other hand, if the tenant had superior information, the tenant knew there was a risk. He knew that, you know, he had hard problems. And he didn't disclose it to the landlord. And 2 weeks later, he drops dead of a massive heart attack. The halacha is different. Because an oinus is only an excuse when you couldn't have anticipated it, and therefore you're potter. However, when it's an oinus that you expected or were aware of the risk, and you didn't disclose the risk, at that point, it becomes your problem. We actually had a tentaira a few months ago. Someone leased a property for a showroom selling appliances, and signed the lease. He mentioned to the landlord that it's going to be used as a showroom, and he didn't say anything more. Now, this particular property was not exactly prime real estate. It was on the second floor in the back of a yeshiva building. It wasn't in very good condition, and it seems that to have an appliance showroom before the big companies are willing to sell to you, they come down, they do an inspection, and they see if this showroom is covetic enough for their image, for their brand. The representative came down, took one look at the property, and said, "No way. No way. You can't sell our brand in a storefront like this." The tenant went back to the landlord and said, "I'm very sorry, but I have to break the lease. and it's an oinus. You knew clearly I was renting it for a specific use of a client showroom. I'm an oinus now. I did not expect to fail. Usually it's just a formality. So now that I'm an oinus, I have the right to break the lease. The landlord argued back, and among his arguments was this taina. He says, Bishleim, if you told me that I'm opening an appliance store and there's going to be an inspection and I need to pass it. So then, I know the risk, you know the risk. If it's an oinus, then at that point you would have the right to say, it's an oinus, you have the right to back out of the contract. But in this case, the landlord says, I'm not in the appliance business. I never knew there was an inspection. I didn't know this risk existed. So if you knew about the risk and you didn't disclose it to me, even if at this point you want to claim it's an oinus, but still, it's an oinus that you knew about or you could have anticipated and I didn't, and therefore the burden shifts to the tenant, and in that case, he would not be able to get out of the lease, even though at this point he has absolutely nothing to do with the property.
Well, let's say like a simple situation. Someone thinks he could afford to rent for 3 years, and he sees he's not making enough money, and he can't pay the rent. Is that called an oinus?
Well, it's very hard to call an oinus in that case. It's probably more of a pshia, but in practical sense, it won't make much of a difference. Because if he doesn't have the money to pay the rent, he's not going to get paid. But oinus means something unanticipated changed. In the case in the Ramah, the tenant died. That certainly wasn't anticipated, and it wasn't in the plans. In the case that we're talking about over here, the argument was that it was an oinus. He said normally, you know, even though the property wasn't in great condition, his argument at least was that it always passes, and this was an extreme case based on his competitors. Whatever the story was, it's not important. But even if it's an oinus, because the landlord didn't know there was a risk at all, he didn't know there was an inspection, at that point, it's his responsibility.
Does it matter if they sold the show beforehand? Does it matter if
they
sold the space beforehand?
Everyone saw the space. The issue was the landlord didn't know there was even an inspection. He didn't know that there was this hurdle that needed to be overcome, and therefore, that whatever the risk of failing that inspection is completely on the tenant.
What would the tenant have been? If I would have known, I would have...
No, it's kind of an oinus. Right now, what he claimed is that I should have, even though it's not in great condition, it should have passed. Everyone else, even in equivalent spaces, got passed. I flunked, or I was rejected as an oinus. It was shocking.
No, but what's the landlord's taina is, if I would have known, I wouldn't have signed it.
The landlord's taina is, I know one thing. I signed a 3-year lease with you for this amount per month.
So he would have said it's a show and it's an inspection.
So then, then the landlord knows that he can only use it if there's an inspection. The tenant knows that. When you have a risk that's equally disclosed, if there's an oinus, the tenant has the right to say goodbye.
Is it not telling the fact that he wouldn't have signed it? You said, let's say, Lu-Yitzur, they would have discussed that. He would have said, I probably would have signed it anyway.
Okay, once you go into the Lu-Yitzur and what would have happened, that's usually Dvarim Shebelev. The point is that when there is a schirus, either schirus poilim or schirus karka, so it's mutl on it's normally mutl on the owner, the landlord, to make a tenai and say, even if there's an oinus, you're still locked in. Otherwise, an oinus is a patur. However, when the landlord isn't aware of the oinus, then the burden of disclosure and the tenai would shift.
It depends
on the case. In a case where it's clear that you need a liquor license, so if a landlord knows that it's needed, and again, we're assuming that it reaches the level of an oinus, which it may not, but assuming it reaches the level of an oinus, then the tenant would be off the hook. In contrast, a typical landlord is not necessarily aware that the appliance company makes inspections, and that's why if an oinus occurs, that's the tenant's responsibility. So it will very much depend on the case, were they both aware or not. The Gemara talks about a case where you hired a worker to work on a field, and there was a flood. So the discussion is, if the workers are local, and they know where the riverbank is, and so they're just as aware of the risk of flooding as the landlord, so then it was disclosed, and the workers have no claim. On the other hand, if you bring in workers from out of town, they're not familiar with the topography of your area, so the landlord knew the risk of the flood, the workers did not, and the landlord would have to pay for the worker even though the field is flooded and can't be worked.
You were saying the landlord, whenever he rents, make sure that, as a lawyer, right, make sure that everyone, make sure that you do sure that your tenant is all necessary, everything's ready to go. I mean, anytime you open up a shop, I'm sorry to be able to, but maybe the price has to be on the landlord.
When you're dealing with an oinus, if someone rents a store knowing five things have to happen, they may happen, they may not, that's lav dafka an oinus. That's a risk that he took. We're talking about a case where there's an oinus. In this particular case, his argument was that this should have been approved. This was a 1 in 1,000 that it was rejected. Again, the story in the background is not relevant for discussion today. It was an oinus. The responsibility for an oinus is generally it's going to be the landlord's loss, unless it's a case where the tenant knew about it and didn't disclose.
Can there also be a consequence?
Okay, let me just, we're running out of time. I just want to move on to the next topic. So this is all when there's a specific end to the lease. It's a 2-year lease, it's a 3-year lease, and someone wants to breach it in the middle. How do we deal with notice? What happens in a typical case? You rent a house, it's month to month, you're paying X amount of dollars per month. At some point, the landlord wants to evict you. Or the tenant decides he needs a bigger house, he wants to move out. What are his responsibilities as far as giving notice to each other to give for the landlord and tenant to give them the opportunity to find a replacement? So here we have a number of interesting gedarim. Me'ikar hadin, if you make up with someone, I'm paying you X amount of dollars per month, each month is a separate deal. And comes the last day of the month, you pay your rent, Me'ikar hadin, you have the right to say, here's your rent, goodbye. What? I have no responsibilities to you. I rented it for this amount per month, so I'm leaving now. Now that being said, Chazal made various takanas. Obviously, this would create hardship, specifically for a tenant. If a landlord could, without any notice, evict a tenant, this would create serious problems. So Chazal said that a landlord has to give a tenant a certain amount of notice. How much notice depends on the type, on the location and the type of use. If you're dealing with a unit in a village, now in villages apparently there was an abundance of available rental units. So there the halacha is you have to give 30 days notice. That was generally sufficient time to find another rental unit. However, this notice had to be in the summer. People generally did not move in the winter. It was cold, it was rainy, it was wet. And therefore, you had to give 30 days notice during the summer. Once you hit the winter months, or once the notice went into the winter, if you gave notice 28 days before the winter, there already you would have to wait until the end of the winter, which is defined as until after Pesach, to evict the person. And that was based on the fact that during the winter, rental units were not available. In a larger city, there was a smaller availability of rental units. There you have to give 12 months notice. Now, there doesn't seem to be a difference between the winter and summer. 12 months was considered enough time to find a replacement unit. A store, a business, whether it's in a city or whether it's in a village, always has 12 months. Store, they have customers coming back and forth. 30 days is not enough time. A bakery, where it's apparently sold on credit. They had a lot of people who owed them money. So if the bakery moves out, once they move out, they didn't have forwarding addresses back then, so it would be very hard for them to collect their debts. So there the halacha was a bakery had to be given 3 years notice before you could evict them. Now, certainly this is hakol lefi hamakom v'hazman. This is the norm as set down by the Mishnah, by the Gemara. However, it very much depends on the time and the place. You would look, today, certainly different guidelines would apply. I mean, I saw there was a sefer written in Eretz Yisrael a few years ago, which said, regardless of where you are, 30 days is certainly enough time to find another unit. It's something that changes. You can't give a hard number. It depends. Muncie is different than Lakewood. And even in Lakewood, every 2 or 3 years, there's a boom, there's a bust, there's a boom, there's a bust. It depends on the particular circumstances on the ground at the time. But the general halacha is, because of this takana, you have to give the tenant sufficient time to find another place to move into. Now, this same halacha applies to the tenant giving notice to the landlord. The same way the landlord has a responsibility not to evict the tenant without giving him enough time to find another unit, the tenant cannot move out without giving the landlord enough time to find a replacement tenant, someone else who he can rent it out to. And in general, the halachas are the same. However much time a tenant needs, that's how much time notice he would have to provide the landlord as well. Now, there's an important tenai to this halacha. And that is, the case is that Torah is discussing, according to almost all Rishonim, is a case where you rented it stam. Rent is $1,200 a month. There's no time frame. There's no end date. So in that case, everyone has the right to assume this will continue indefinitely until they're given adequate notice. On the other hand, if you move into a unit and the landlord says, I'm renting it to you for 1 year, I'm renting it to you for 2 years. It ends on this date, January 1st, 2017. The lease is over. In that case, this whole halacha doesn't apply. Because the whole point of this halacha is you have to give notice. They have to know to look for another unit. But if when you came in, they rented it specifically for a two-year term, you have notice from day one that at the end of the 2 years, you have no right to stay. And therefore, in that case, he would not have to give any additional notice. It's his musra v'oimed. He's put on notice from the beginning, and neither party would have to give any notice.
Even if the term is less than the amount of notification you have to give, let's say it's
a 2 week lease?
A 2 month lease in place where typically you need 3 months to find a replacement.
Okay, if you write specifically, I'm only renting it for you for 2 months, then enochanami. I would imagine a hotel where you rent a room overnight, you can't argue that, listen, I have 30 days or a year to move out. But an economy. So in a case where there's a specific end date, he's considered a Musra V'Oimed, and therefore he's on notice, and these halachos would not apply. It's only in a case where you rented just X amount per month without a specific end date, there already you would have to give notice. Now, during this notice period, let's assume we're dealing with a big city. You have to give 12 months notice. So what happens if the landlord says, okay, I have to give you notice, I can't evict you, but I want to raise the rent. Does he have the right to do so or not? So the Gemara says that no. Because if you have the right to raise the rent during this period, but then the fact that you don't have the right to evict him is... Because you just call up the tenant and say, okay, I can't evict you for 12 months, but if you want to stay, $25,000 a month. That's effectively evicting him, and therefore you cannot unilaterally raise the rent. However, in a case where, during the term of the lease, the market value went up, and now the market value, you rented it to this tenant, he's paying $2,000 a month. It's a year later, and you give him notice. But today, the market value is $3,000 a month. Over here, the halacha is different. Over here, since the value is in fact $3,000 a month, although there's a takana, we protect the tenant, and we say we're going to protect the tenant, he can't be thrown out into the streets, that takana is just that we're not going to throw him onto the streets. But to force the landlord to suffer a loss and to accept below market value rent, that we cannot do, and therefore the landlord would have the right to raise the rent. It can only be to fair market value. He can't do it above that, and normally a landlord can charge whatever he wants as rent. In this case, he can only raise it to fair market value, but not above that.
Without notice?
What?
Without any notice.
Correct. He has to tell the person in the beginning of the month that from here on, if you want to stay, and I'm giving you then the rent is higher. You're only protected against rent increases when you have a contract for a fixed term. If there's no fixed term, then there's no protection. Okay, there are a number of other tanoim over here, but Mitzvah Shem will discuss those next week.
If you have to give a notice.